Good morning and welcome back. Hope everybody had a good time last night. I know I did, so we're going to have a fun presentation this morning. So what we're going to be covering today is an overview of System Center Virtual Machine Manager in 2012. So what we're going to focus on is kind of the key improvements in the 2012 release, but specifically focusing on what's new in 2012 R2. I'm Simon, a technical evangelist with Microsoft Corp, and Virtual Machine Manager is one of the technologies I cover. Now, we're basically going to go through the different stages of deployment. Deploying our servers, deploying our storage, deploying our network, deploying our cloud, and then we're going to look at kind of day-to-day operations using Virtual Machine Manager. Now, we have kind of a smaller audience, so if you have questions throughout, I am going to take questions during the presentation. If we start to get behind on time, I may ask to stop, may ask to hold them to the end. But if there's something that interests you, something you want to know more about, raise your hand and we'll try to cover it during the session. So when we started designing Virtual Machine Manager in 2012, every time we do a release, we spend a lot of time speaking with our customers, speaking with our enterprise customers, our most valuable professionals, going through the forums, and trying to collect a lot of feedback. And so these were the major requests that we got, the major challenges people had. They wanted a more centralized place to go manage all of their infrastructure. And infrastructure meaning pretty much anything that they can run. The storage, the networking, the compute, the clusters, VMware clusters, Citrix clusters. So we try to really be broad in our design here, trying to be able to manage the entire infrastructure, not just Microsoft. People are finding that their day-to-day costs are increasing, so we try to centralize things. And one thing that you're going to really notice is we're spending a lot of time looking at virtualization. And not just virtualization of servers, virtualization of the whole infrastructure. Storage virtualization, network virtualization. We're going to go through some demos in a little bit and kind of show you how we build some of these different pieces. Now, the whole goal around virtualizing these other components is to simplify management. We want to get people away from having to think about managing their networks at the per IP address level, managing storage using the EMC management console or the NetApp management console. We're really trying to centralize it and provide you with a single location where you can go deploy your servers, your storage, your network, without really having to think about which vendor am I using, which piece of network equipment am I using. We really wanted to take advantage of both on-premise and cloud as well. You guys have probably heard us talk about cloud a lot this week, but this is going to kind of be a continual theme because we really realize that cloud can be used to take advantage whenever you're running low on your own resources. In your own data center, go scale out to the cloud. So we're going to talk a little bit about clouds, how we build them. So let's get started and look at how we deploy our servers. So what we really wanted to do here was provide just a consistent management platform, regardless of which hypervisor you are using. Now, when we go and talk about managing these different hypervisors, there are some limitations that, you know, we want to talk about here. So when we talk about VMware, what can we do with VMware? Well, we really wanted to focus on day-to-day operations. Now, does this mean that VMM can do everything that vCenter or vSphere can do? No, it doesn't. What it can do is kind of the 90%, the kind of day-to-day operations where you're deploying VMs, deploying networks, managing your storage, provisioning VMs, looking at placement, doing things like distributed resource scheduling, so load balancing across those hosts. But it cannot do a lot of things such as the initial configuration, the initial setup. So it's not going to be able to do things with VMware such as configuring your distributed vSwitches. So kind of the way we want to look at managing VMware is day-to-day operations we cover, the initial configuration, you're going to have to still do that using vCenter. Now, we also do have a dependency on vCenter as well. What you're actually going to see VMM do, if you're managing VMware, is first thing you actually need to go and add your vCenter server. And the reason why we still have this dependency on vCenter is because the individual ESXi hosts from VMware, they actually are not an open platform. There's no way that VMM can directly communicate with those hosts. VMware locked it down. The only way that VMM can go and communicate with VMware is via vCenter. So for example, if we wanted to do a vMotion between two different hosts, VMM would tell vCenter do the vMotion, and then vCenter would go and tell those individual ESX hosts, go do the vMotion. So we still kind of have this dependency on vCenter as kind of an intermediary every time we kind of do this communication. Now, Citrix Zen server is different. We can directly communicate with those Zen servers. We don't need to have a Zen center sitting in the middle. So if you want to do a Zen motion, we could just tell the host, go do a Zen motion, they'll move around. Now, looking in the long run, you know, as we kind of look at these different partners, you're going to see us continue to invest in VMware. But as you may have heard of, a couple of months ago, Citrix is no longer investing in their own virtualization platform for servers. They're really only going to be focusing on their VDI. They've actually made Zen, their Zen virtualization platform, open source. They're no longer putting engineers on it. They're saying, here you go, community. Here's the code. You guys go work on this in the community. So as we kind of look at a long-term roadmap, looking with Citrix, looking with VMware, you're going to see a lot of continued investment with VMware. But if Citrix isn't even invested in their own virtualization platform, you're going to see a lot of these other partners, a lot of these integration solution integrators slowly kind of divest in this as well. And so that's kind of how we're looking at this as our long-term strategy too. So as we look at deploying our Hyper-V host, one of the things that we wanted to do is make it easy. And so as we look at communicating with the individual host, when you get a brand new server, we want to just kind of plug them in and then be able to use them. So I'm going to go through a demo of a Hyper-V deployment, bare metal deployment shortly. But really what we're trying to do with our bare metal deployments is go communicate to the initial server, get an IP address. Once we can start communicating with that server using the baseball management controller, we go install our operating system, go enable Hyper-V, add it to our cluster, start using it as a host. But again, I'm going to go through this quickly so I can show you the demo. So here's the way basically the end-to-end flow works. First of all, the VMM server goes and communicates with the bare metal server. It then goes and speaks to Windows Deployment Service, WDS. And it says, hey, I want to go get an image. What's the best image for me to use? Goes and sends that image to VMM, goes and deploys the image on this host. It's going to install it, it's going to reboot, and then finally, it's going to go and communicate with back with VMM and say, hey, I'm now a member of your servers. You can manage me. I'm going to be part of your clusters. Now, we can fully automate this if we want. If we go through this whole process, and we really are trying to just make this easier for customers as they get new hardware, simply add it in, plug in their hardware, start using it as part of their production system. So you're going to see us continue to keep investing in integrating with our hardware vendors. And then end-to-end here, you can actually join them to the clusters, install Hyper-V, add it to part of a host group, and start managing it. Now, as we talk a little more about managing multiple hypervisors, currently we support vSphere 4, 4.1, 5, 5.1, vCenter, and Citrix up to 6.1. Now, VMware, they're currently releasing version 5.5. Our plan is to add support for that as soon as we can, but it's not actually coming out with the 2012 R2 release. So be there, stay cautious. We'll be adding support for that very soon. Now, let's go over to our first demo and actually show you a walkthrough of how we go and add these brand new hosts. So what you see here is a virtual machine manager in 2012. And I'm going to say that I want to go and add a new Hyper-V host. Now, over here, you get a set of different options. It can be a server that's already part of Active Directory, something that's brand new that we want to go add to our infrastructure, which is what we're going to select in this case. Now, next thing it's going to do is ask, what are you going to run it under? So you select an account. And then it's going to ask, what is the out-of-band management protocol that you want to use? And you could go use Smash, IPMI, or a custom management solution here. Now, the baseball management controller is basically part of the server that allows us to go and communicate with it immediately without having an operating system on it. Now, each of the major hardware vendors, everybody has their own BMC, this baseball management controller. And what the BMC does, it basically speaks with the hardware in the server, and then it can speak with the operating system. So it's kind of like the initial installation process. So when you think of things like the BIOS, that goes and communicates with the BMC. You get a hardware error that gets sent through the operating system. That goes through the BMC. So you can kind of think of the BMC as almost a pre-installed, lightweight operating system. And so it can do things such as have an IP address. It could go and do some authentication with Active Directory. But what we're really going to use this to do is kind of get the initial deployment up and running. So the next thing that it asks us for is to go and actually discover any brand new servers in our environment. So what we're going to do here is provide a range of IP addresses, hit next, and it's going to go and actually discover the whole environment, figure out which IP addresses are available based on DHCP. So we're going to go select one of our servers here. And then it's going to give us the option to actually go and place this in one of our host groups. So I'm going to keep my default selection. And a host group is kind of like a logical unit for management. Basically, where do we want to place it? So you can have host groups based on geography, host groups based on different deployment schemes, host groups based on different resources. So maybe your engineering host group has the best servers. You then have a host group for kind of the rest of your infrastructure. So now that we've actually figured out which of the particular servers we want to manage, our next step is to provide it with unique information so that we can then start managing it, interacting with it, deploy our operating system. So here we're actually going to specify the name we want to use, provide a MAC address, and then we could go and use the same IP address or go and provide a new IP address. So in this case, we'll keep the same IP address. Confirm the settings. And we've now gone and actually added this brand new server under management. It's going to go install Hyper-V. It's going to install our default operating system based on our Pixie Boot server. And then we'll be able to actually manage the server just like it was part of our regular infrastructure. Now, if you want to go make it part of the cluster, you kind of have to do the next step, actually join it to the cluster. But that can also be done through Virtual Machine Manager. So the next big area of investment that we looked at was managing our storage. Now, as we look at storage management, first thing that we wanted to do is really be able to manage different types of storage arrays, whether they're SAS, iSCSI, serial attached SCSI, fiber channel over Ethernet, even file shares. So you probably have heard the new version of Hyper-V. It now supports SMB shares, so you can go and store your Hyper-V virtual machines through a file share. So like when you go deploy a new VM, you can specify the path, the location as WACWAC, my share, myvm.vhd. So we want to make sure that we can support all these new different types of storage. And in a second, we're actually going to go, in our next demo, go actually add some file shares to Virtual Machine Manager so we can manage that. Next thing we wanted to do was understand our capacity as well. So get insight into how our VMs are being used, how the storage is being used, and make sure that we can effectively manage the storage. Now, with this most recent release of Windows Server 2012, we've added a feature known as Storage Live Migration. And Storage Live Migration allows us to move the storage of a running virtual machine between different hosts, between different storage arrays, that actually keep that same virtual machine online and running. And so we wanted to make sure the Virtual Machine Manager can take advantage of that as well. So let's say, for example, you have a cluster and you have a single disk and there's 20 VMs on that disk. Well, if you need to do maintenance on that disk, take it offline, you could potentially impact 20 virtual machines at once. But the nice thing about our storage live migration gives us the ability to live migrate all of those VHDX files off, do our maintenance, do our patching, repair the storage, those VMs stay running. When it's finished, you can live migrate everything back. So using Virtual Machine Manager, we're really giving you options to do maintenance on your storage as well. Now, the other investment was around easy provisioning, easy to deploy. So what we now do is take advantage of things such as ODX, offloaded data transfer. This gives you the ability to have a storage array that can directly copy its information to a different storage array through the storage fabric. Now, this kind of is different from traditional storage copying. With traditional storage copying, you would go and copy the information from the first server, place it in memory of the server you're managing it from, then go back through the network, copy it to that second storage array. What we're able to use with ODX is direct file transfer through the fabric between those two different storage arrays. So what we're really trying to do here is take advantage of all of the Windows Server latest technologies here. Now, one way that we did this is we created a new API called the Storage Management API, SMAPI. Now, as we spoke to a lot of customers, they said, we're working with all these different vendors, but many of them were locked in to just using EMC or just using Dell. And when our customers were locked into a single customer, they found that their costs were gradually increasing over time. So what we really try to do is think about how we can virtualize this, virtualize the management of storage. And so with this release of Windows Server 2012, we've created our new virtual storage layer. Now what this means is we've actually worked with each of the all of the major OEMs, so Dell, Hitachi, NEC, Fujitsu, all of these big hardware providers. And we understand what their main storage APIs are. So what's the API to deploy storage, to provision a new LAN, to grow storage, to shrink it, you know, kind of these day-to-day common operations. And each of these companies, you know, they have their own different APIs. They have their own custom code. So what we wanted to do is make people not have to worry about that. If you're an admin, we don't want you to think, if I want to deploy a SAN on EMC, I have to do it this way. If I want to do it on Dell, I have to do it this way. We basically wanted to use Virtual Machine Manager as a single central location to allow you to deploy across all different types of storage. So this Server Management API, it's basically a layer that we can inject between us actually doing management through VMM and then the storage arrays at the bottom. So through VMM, you say, I want to go and deploy, I want to carve a new LAN, 100 gigabytes. What we will do is we will send that communication through this layer, through this storage management API. And then it doesn't matter what type of storage array you're using, we will then go and translate that for you. So if you're using EMC, we will send those commands to the EMC array using the EMC APIs. If you're doing it with NetApp, we will go and send the same type of request, but using the NetApp APIs. So what we're basically doing is being a translator for you. Instead of you having to learn these different languages for these different storage arrays, you now just have to learn one language, the Server Management API, and we will go and do this translation for you under the covers seamlessly. And so our goal here is just really simplify the management. So you can now start working with other vendors. You don't really have to do additional training working with Dell or switching over to EMC. You just kind of learn this basic set of APIs, and it's going to cover you across all these different solutions. Now, we also wanted to do monitoring as well, make sure that we can keep track of the storage, keep it healthy. So you're going to find these server management APIs are constantly polling the storage as well, figuring out what's being used, what's not being used, how much space you have left. So we try to be a little more proactive in sending up alerts. Now, if you want the most detailed type of storage monitoring, you're probably going to want to use Operations Manager as well to complement it. With Operations Manager, you can actually customize how much space is left when you want to send an alert. With Virtual Machine Manager, we have some built-in thresholds. So we can send some default alerts, but it's, I guess, less customizable. So here's the five different types of storage that we manage now. So using the traditional fiber channel fabric, we get to do zone management. You can create worldwide names, private networks. Basically, kind of do the standard fiber channel management you want. Using iSCSI, serial attached SCSI, add resources, grow them, shrink the LANs. With file servers, we can now actually deploy a file server using Virtual Machine Manager. So a lot of people kind of ask, you know, why are you spending so much time actually managing file servers? This doesn't really seem relevant to virtual machines. Well, this goes back to the whole investment that we've made with Hyper-V, being able to run your Hyper-V virtual machines on a file server. What we realize is being able to go and actually, you know, share that virtual machine across a file share path means that we have a lot more customers now actually using file shares as their backend storage. So we wanted to make sure that we could support those file shares as backend storage, actually deploy these file server clusters so that you can actually keep that storage highly available. Now, the way these file share clusters, oh, yes, question. So the question is, does Operations Manager use VMM to monitor the storage? If you're using just Operations Manager, you'll actually get a management pack that's specific to that storage vendor. So if you're working with Dell, you would get the Dell Storage Management Pack. Now, Operations Manager is highly extensible, so you have all these different storage vendors, different storage arrays, and so each of them does have a custom management pack, so we can get better insight. Now, the amount of insight you get will vary depending on that vendor. So, you know, some vendors have invested a lot in their management packs, some not so much. But things just as basic storage usage, storage monitoring, that's covered by all the major vendors. VHDX. So let's talk a little bit about shared VHDX as well. So with shared VHDX, this is one of the new features that we added in Windows Server 2012. Now, traditionally, when people go and deploy storage for a guest cluster, a cluster made up of a bunch of VMs, such as in a hoster environment, or you know, you have a large business unit, you want to give people access to VMs, they want to deploy a cluster, one of the challenges we had was actually having to expose that storage infrastructure to our end users. So a guest cluster is a couple of VMs, they're connected, form a cluster, and they still need shared storage. So what we try to do with this release is make it a little easier, kind of abstract that underlying storage. And so we've created a new type of shared storage known as a shared VHDX file. Now what this means is you can basically take one virtual machine and say, this virtual machine storage is going to be this VHDX. And that's kind of traditional, right? Most VMs run on a VHDX file type. But now we're able to connect multiple VMs to that same VHDX file. This means that if you're running an application such as SQL inside VMs, that SQL database will run on that shared VHDX file. So node 1 can see the SQL database, node 2 can see the SQL database. And so our goal here is really just to provide another option for your guest clustering with VHDX. Now as we look at the storage allocation process, first thing we do is use a storage management provider to go and actually discover our storage. So this makes it a little easier for people to go and use, you know, Virtual Machine Manager. Instead of having to necessarily specify the array, define it, we could just use standard protocols, SMIS, to really capture that storage, add it to our cluster, add it to Virtual Machine Manager. And we'll show some storage discovery in our next demo. So once we can actually go discover the storage, we could go create pools. Now, storage spaces was one of the big enhancements that we made in Windows Server 2012. Storage spaces allows us to virtualize our storage. And this is kind of, you know, the same concept of just adding a layer on top, so you don't have to go speak to those individual servers, those individual storage arrays. So with a storage space, what we can do is take commodity hardware, a bunch of disks, something cheap, and you can go create a larger array with them. So if you go buy 100 you know, regular SSD drives, you can create a pool out of that. And then within that pool, you can go and allocate the storage as you need. And so what we try to do with Virtual Machine Manager is make sure that we can still use those pools. Make sure that we can go access storage spaces, create spaces, manage spaces. So we want to basically take advantage of the latest Windows Server innovations. When you create a pool of servers, you can allocate it to a specific group, deploy it, use it, deploy VMs on it. Now here's an example of how we actually go and deploy this new type of file server, our scale-out file server. So what we basically have is a collection of servers that we're already managing, a bunch of Hyper-V hosts or file servers. We have our storage, we create pools out of the storage. We create spaces out of those pools. We deploy our scale-out file cluster, and those different servers can now use these different storage arrays. So let's go back over to our demo here and actually take a look at how we can go provision storage. So back in Virtual Machine Manager here, I'm going to go back to my fabric. And under fabric, we could go and say, I want to go and add a new storage device. So here's basically the different types of options you have. You say, I want to add a Windows file server. I want to add storage that's managed by a traditional SMIS provider. I want to add storage that's managed by an SMP provider. So we're going to go and add a traditional Windows file server as our storage. We've got to specify our domain. We've got to specify the run as account. It's going to go and discover the actual storage here. So we've gone and found our actual domain controller. And so here's all the different file shares that are available on this particular server. So we basically connect to the server. We get to list all the different types of storage that we can manage through it. So let's go and add these three file shares. Confirm the settings. And we can see that our file servers have now been added. So what this means here is, as we go take a look at the different providers, we now see DC01's online. Take a look at our file servers. We see that these file shares that we've just added are available. They're online. Now, even if we go down to our storage, we can go and add new shares as well. So let's actually go through here and go and add those file shares that we just discovered to our library. Now, I apologize for the screen resolution here. We actually lost our whole demo system just before we started this session, so kind of improvising a little bit here. So it's gone and discovered our domain controller. We're going to add this as a file share. It once again gives us the different options for our shares. Confirm the settings, and we could go and add these as a library. Now, one of the really interesting things about Virtual Machine Manager as well is anytime you go through a wizard, you have the ability to actually see the PowerShell script as well. So Virtual Machine Manager is built entirely on PowerShell, meaning that everything you see in the graphical user interface under the covers will go call a PowerShell script. So we're really trying to encourage more customers to learn PowerShell, add this script in, because this is going to help you with automation. Let's say, for example, you had to go and add 10 different library servers. Well, going through that wizard 10 times might be painful, but if you see the script after you do it the first time, you can go copy it, save it, run it as batch, and really try to automate this deployment as well. So we'll go and add this as a library server, and this means anything in that share can now be managed by Virtual Machine Manager. Now, while we wait for this to get added, it's going to take a few minutes. We'll go back and talk about how we deploy networking with Virtual Machine Manager. So within networking, we wanted to look at network virtualization once again. It's kind of a big investment. Now, as we kind of look at what a lot of our customers have, we see them starting to grow, have these different data centers. And managing networks in one data center, managing them in the other, it could cause some complexity. So we really try to introduce this concept of network virtualization. Make things a little easier to manage. So you're no longer thinking about the specific network, specific subnets. You're thinking about things at a more abstracted level. So similar to how you would go and say, with the storage virtualization, I want to go and deploy a new LAN. We handle all the translation transparently. We can now do the same thing with our networks. Say, I want to go deploy a VM to this network. You don't need to worry about the IP addresses, IP address management. We understand how that looks. So we can just go and add that VM to that specific network. So we're basically adding this layer of abstraction. So as we look at network virtualization, we're basically going through here. And the first thing that we do when we set this up is assign our networks. So we say, what is our current network infrastructure? What is the IP address range? We go define that as a logical network. And so managing this concept of logical networks basically allows us to go and easily deploy things. So we say, hey, this is our network infrastructure. This is how my logical network is laid out. I want to go deploy to this logical network. And we go and handle the translation, what's actually happening under the covers. So you say, I want to go deploy to this network. We go figure out the names of the hosts, the different IP addresses, and we do this layer of translation. So if you say my logical network should be in the 10.10 IP address range, you have 256 IP addresses, you go deploy to that, we will then go and actually figure out what that really means, what IP addresses you really want to use. So from your perspective, you get to manage things using this easy IP address range. We're actually going to go translate things behind the scenes for you, figure out where things should live, figure out what their real networking address should be. So as we look at the different types of networks as well, we wanted to focus on having lots of users be able to use the same network. So we provide network isolation as well, having multiple tenants, multiple users on a network. This allows people to basically bring their own devices. They say, hey, I'm going to go join this network, join with a device. They get an IP address as part of this new logical network. And one of the other enhancements that we added in Windows Server 2012 was quality of service for both our storage and our networking. And we've gone and exposed that up through Virtual Machine Manager as well. Quality of service essentially allows you to provide a minimum and a maximum amount of bandwidth for a particular network or storage. So let's say you have 100 VMs on a host. You want to make sure that one of those VMs doesn't use all of your network capacity or all of your storage capacity. And so what we can essentially do is say every VM can have a maximum bandwidth and always has a, and can have a minimum bandwidth, meaning it's guaranteed that much network. This way we can ensure that all of these different VMs, they can communicate through the network, they have the resources that they need. So what we're going to look at next is defining logical switches. So we talked about having these, we have the real devices, and then we want to have logical devices. And basically, every time we talk about having logical, we're talking about abstracting things. So let's say you start with a traditional switch. You have a database switch. It has different extensions, different profiles. You have a web switch. You have an iSCSI switch. You have a team. What we're really trying to do here is say, instead of having to manage all of these different entities as individual switches, we can group them together and say, I want to have a single logical switch for Building 44. I want to go deploy a VM, and it will use this switch. Now, what this really means, again, under the covers, we go figure out which of these real switches to use, send the information across them. Now, continuing our support of the different types of networking devices, we wanted to make sure we support load balancers. Now, when you talk about load balancers, you can, of course, have physical load balancers, things such as F5, Citrix NetScaler, and you can have actually virtualized load balancers as well. And this is really what Virtual Machine Manager is going to be more interested in. Now, all of these major actual hardware vendors like F5, Citrix, they're now offering virtualized versions of their actual physical devices as well. So what are the advantages of deploying a virtualized version of a load balancer? Well, you can clone it. You can deploy multiple versions. You can manage it from a single interface. You don't need to directly log on. So what we're really trying to encourage our customers to do is do virtualization throughout the stack, virtualize their network devices, their computers, their resources, their storage. Now, Microsoft supports, of course, Windows Server Network Load Balancing. That's our free inbox load balancer. What you can now do with Virtual Machine Manager is it comes pre-configured with NLB. So if you say, I need a load balancer that I need to deploy in my environment, you can actually deploy NLB immediately. It will come in a virtual machine, a Windows Server VM, just running network load balancing. And that will do all of the logical translation to the backend system. So if you're running an IIS website, you have 10 VMs that are part of your web tier. We can automatically place a virtualized load balancer in front of that. It will take the incoming traffic through a virtualized IP address, and then on the back end, go send it out to its different hosts. So we just try to make it easy to go deploy these types of load balancers as well. We wanted to do switch management as well. Sorry, switch extension management. So if you work with Cisco, Inmon, Five9, NEC, and you need to go and forward packets to real networking devices that do analysis, filtering, egress, ingress monitoring, we can go and send this information out. And finally, we added support for our NVGRE gateway, Network Virtualization Gateway. So with a Network Virtualization Gateway, what we're really trying to do here is allow you to have isolated virtual networks, but still have access to your corporate resources when you need them. So when you go deploy a virtual network, you're basically providing a new IP address range for a user, a particular set of devices. So at Microsoft, one thing that we have is a lot of developers, a lot of people that need to set up their own infrastructure, set up Active Directory, DHCP servers, and we want to make sure that that doesn't interfere with our main corporate networks. So every employee at Microsoft, they get their own private network that they can work with, they can experiment with. They have 256 IP addresses, so they don't really have limitations on how many VMs they can deploy. And so this kind of provides an easy-to-use development environment. But of course, every now and then, we still need access to our main corporate resources. You need to deploy a VHD. You need to copy a file, access Active Directory. And so every time we want to go and access our main corporate resources, that causes a challenge because we're kind of on this isolated network. So this is where this gateway is used, the inbox gateway. What it basically allows us to do is do a translation from our internal world back out to the corporate resource world without having any other type of interference. So we now, this NVGRE gateway, essentially it adds a tag to your IP address packets. So when the traffic goes out to the private network, gets sent to the corporate resource, we know where it needs to go back to. So we make a request, send the information back, and we know which backend server on our private network we're able to access. So with this gateway, there are third parties, vendors that actually provide these as physical devices, as virtual devices, but with VMM 2012R2, we actually provide one that's in box. So what this means is, if you need to go deploy a virtual network, you need to deploy this gateway, you can just set up a new VM, say which networks can connect to it, which networks can access it, what Active Directory domain is it on, and we will go and set up this VM for you. And this will actually do all of this translation when people go from their private networks back out to the external world. All right, so let's jump back to our demo system here and take a look at some of our network settings. So it looks like our library server was successfully added. And what we're now going to do here is go to our fabric and do some of our network management. So I'm going to expand networking. And under here, you see a lot of different options. We have our logical networks. These are the things that we're going to define, which basically, under the covers, have one of our real networks. Address MAC address pools, load balancers, switch extensions, and down here is your gateway, if you want to go have a NVGRE gateway. So let's go ahead and take a look at our load balancers first. So by default, everything comes with Windows Server Network load balancing. What we now want to do here is create what we call a VIP template. Now, VIP stands for virtual IP address. Whenever you have a load balancer or a network device that takes multiple connections, we go and create what's called this virtual IP address. And so what this means is, let's say you have a website, you have 10 different servers, and you want to have a load balancer in front of them. Well, you create this virtual IP address so that you tell your end users, connect to this single IP address, and then the single IP address will go and actually figure out which of those 10 different servers you want to access on the back end. So let's go and create a new virtual IP address. So we'll call this VIP for NLB. Oh, specify my port number here. We could go and include a specific manufacturer. Now, since we only have Microsoft, it's going to be our default here. We select what protocols we want to use. We can select whether we want persistence. And so basically, persistence means whether that particular client should get connected to the same backend server or not. So we'll actually turn off persistence here. Click Finish. And now we have a new virtualized IP address that we can use. So if we wanted to go set up a new load balancer, we could go use this virtual IP address. as part of it. Now, the next thing we want to do is actually go create a new logical network here. So we're going to go give this a name. So we'll call this logical. We want to say that allow VMs to go and use network virtualization if they're running on this network. Now, here's where we can go and add different subnets. So I go add a new subnet. I can add a VLAN. We'll give this a standard IP address. It's an invalid subnet. Click Finish. And so basically what I did is I said my underlying subnet is 10.001. We now get to go and manage this as this logical network. So what I can do is every time I go deploy a new VM, I just say I want to go deploy it to logical Denmark. It will go figure out that IP address range, go deploy it to that particular network. Now from here, we want to go and create what's called an IP a pool of IP addresses. So we have this underlying network. We want to go and basically say which IP addresses on this network are available for use. So we'll call this let's call this pool for our cluster. So we can kind of specify different use cases. We say, I want to use my existing network, so this logical network I just created. And then we get to specify which IP addresses. So if you remember, this was the network that I specified. And within this network, I have my 254 IP addresses. And then specifically for this cluster pool, let's go give it 25 IP addresses. You can add default gateway. Let me just delete that. Add DNS servers. Add default connection suffixes. Add a WAN server if I am still using that. Click Finish. And now we have this pool of IP addresses specifically for my cluster network. And so what this means is every time I go deploy a new server, we say what network? And we can say which pool of IP addresses to use. So you can just kind of think of this as more simplified management. Every time we deploy, we get to go use these pre-configured settings. All right, so let's go back and now talk about how we actually go build our private cloud. So we have this concept of cloud and virtual machine manager. And we use the cloud terminology kind of often. So what does a cloud really mean inside Virtual Machine Manager? What a cloud means is it's our pool of resources, a collection of resources that we can go and use as we need. Now, as you start to add resources to Virtual Machine Manager, everything's actually going to go to this default cloud. So I go back to my VMs and services, and you're going to see that I have a cloud. So any server I add, any storage I add, any networking I add, will all get put into this single cloud. But what we want to do here is be able to carve up these clouds for different types of use cases. So for example, I might have an engineering team. And I'm going to give them the fastest resources possible. So they're going to be part of my gold cloud. So they're going to have access to fiber channel storage, SSDs, the fastest 10 gig networks. And then I might have another cloud for maybe my human resources department. They have access to the slower servers. So really, what you can think of clouds is breaking up all of the resources that you've grouped together for individual use cases. Now, we often see clouds also used based on geography. So you have different data centers, one cloud for each of the different data centers. Now, my own team at Microsoft, we do a lot of in-person events, training events, hands-on labs. And so we actually provide different clouds to each of our different events. So we have an event that's saying doing a demo for a virtual machine manager. We provide that user with his own cloud. And within that cloud, we limit the capacity, which service he can use, how many VMs he can deploy, the total amount of memory they can deploy. So we're really trying to use cloud as breaking down this pool of resources for the individual use cases. So with our clouds, we can go connect them to the underlying resources, our physical infrastructure, our storage, networks. We then get to the ability to actually control the resources for those individual users. How many CPUs, memory, storage, VMs. And there's even a custom quota that you can use. So let's say, for example, you have something like a limit on the amount of network traffic. Well, you can go define a value system, a set of quota points for that particular metric you need, and still limit people based on your own custom metric. We then also get to control which set of VMs people can use. So you could say you can use this set of VMs. You could say it can only use VMs that are running on VMware, only VMs running on Citrix. But then we really wanted to go and provide different user cases as well. So we provide role-based access with Virtual Machine Manager, giving people different priority, different access based on what type of administrator they are. So the default general administrator you get to see is the VMM admin. They're going to have access to the entire system. They can do anything that they want. So this is kind of like the primary user here. Now, you might have VMM admins that are part of different data centers. So if you have, you know, two data centers, maybe one of those admins should only have access to one of those data centers. And so we provide a user role called a delegated administrator. And you can basically say, this admin only has access to this cloud, to this set of storage. We then have what we call our tenant administrators. And so these tenant administrators, they're basically users that don't have full control. So we're not going to give them access to our network, not going to give them access to our storage. We still give them the ability to go deploy VMs, go have this basic functionality. We then have read-only administrators. So these might be people that do troubleshooting. And they can log into Virtual Machine Manager. They can see everything that's running. But they can't actually perform an action on anything. So they can go view the health of the clusters, the systems. But for example, they couldn't do a vMotion. They couldn't do anything. They just have read-only access. And finally, we have our self-service users. These are our users that are logging in and doing only very specific actions. And we actually manage these using Virtual Machine Manager's kind of sister product known as System Center App Controller. So App Controller is basically a self-service portal that's attached to Virtual Machine Manager, uses a website, and from this website, people could go and deploy VMs, deploy services, but it's very scoped to what they can do. Now, within each of these different user roles, not only do we provide or tell them which clouds they can access, but we can also limit the actions that each of them can do. So you can say to a self-service user, you have the ability to start your VMs, stop your VMs, but you don't have the ability to deploy a new VM. Or maybe you want to limit your users so they cannot take snapshots or checkpoints because that goes and uses a lot of storage space. So we have very, very granular control across these different systems. We then have the ability to assign capacity to each of these users, each of these clouds. So what this means is an individual user or the collection of users within that organizational unit could have maximum amount for that individual or maximum amount for the entire group. So CPU, memory, storage, number of virtual machines. And what we then do is be able to aggregate it. So let's say you have 10 users within a group. We could go and make sure that that entire group has a maximum as well. And then we have reporting on how our resources are being used. So there's some built-in reporting within Virtual Machine Manager. Tells you the storage, the network, amount of resources that are being used. Now, additionally, we can actually forecast future utilization. So based on the historic trends, growth, things like that, we could go and actually run reports through Operations Manager, pick our hosts, look at the details, and view our results to make predictive analysis, saying, over the last month, we've seen this amount of growth. What's our future forecast looking like? So we try to provide some more predictive insight as well. So let's go back to our management console here and take a look at managing clouds and users. So within our large cloud here, we're going to go and specify a subcloud. So let's call this engineering. I typed that one badly. Let me try again. So here's our engineering cloud. Get to specify groups of resources. We can specify logical networks, load balances, VIP profiles, classifications. So what type of networks are we going to use this? Live migration, maybe. Add storage. Add file shares. So this particular cloud only has access to these file shares. Specify capacity. So maybe this particular cloud can have a maximum of 1,000 gigabytes of memory, 10,000 gigabytes of storage, or 10 terabytes. We then say, what type of VMs can run on this cloud? Hyper-V, VMware, Citrix. Confirm the settings. And we now go and create a new cloud. So we now have this cloud here that we can use for engineering. Now, next thing we're going to do is create some user roles. So I'm going to go down to my settings here and take a look at my different user roles. So right now, I have my default administrator. We're going to go create a new one as well for our self-service engineer. We get to specify whether they're going to have read-only access, limited access. In this case, we're going to give them the self-service access. Then get to specify which members are going to be part of this group. So we could specify an organizational unit or a particular user. So specify this user role. What cloud do they have access to? What's the quotas for this cloud? So you can see that these values that we added, 10,000, are still copied over here. So we can say each individual member, instead of having access to 10 terabytes, each individual member only has 1 terabyte. Add virtual networks. And then here's the different types of actions we can do. So for this particular user, we're going to allow them to create templates, access remotely, and then do kind of the basic VM operations, but not let them store, not let them perform checkpoints. Provide different run as accounts, so who's this user going to be running under? Confirm the settings, and of course, view the script. So if we wanted to create lots of roles, we could go script this, we could go automate this. So now we've set up our different users, our different user roles. All right, so final thing we're going to look at is day-to-day operations here. And so with day-to-day operations, now that we've deployed our infrastructure, we want to think about how we can manage it and effectively run our virtual machines. So with System Center 2012, we added this concept of a service template. And a service template is a collection of different virtual machines that get deployed and managed as a single logical unit. So you might have these large business applications that run across multiple VMs. This is kind of the concept that we try to embrace, try to understand, these large scale-out systems. So we call this our service template. And as you think about how you build a VM, you get to define the different hardware pieces, the guest operating system. We're now trying to simplify this collection of all these different pieces of hardware, all these different guest operating systems, through this concept of our service template. Now, first time you go set up a service template, it's kind of an upfront investment. You want to go build it out, define the logical networks, what storage it's attached to, the different clouds. But then you can go save these templates in a library. So next time you want to go and provision this service, it's going to get built exactly as you want. And so we try to think of using these templates as a way to standardize our operations. So let's say you're deploying this new service once a week as your developer has a new release cycle. Well, if you're manually configuring this every time, every week, there's a chance of human error. What we're trying to get people to think about is defining this the first time correctly in a template, and then each iteration, each release, you're not actually rebuilding all the virtual networks and configuring the storage. With each release, you're just going and selecting a template, adding the new application, and redeploying it. This way, you can be ensured that all those other components are configured correctly. So as we look at service templates, we have the ability to provision the individual tiers, and then we can actually provision VMs within a single tier and grow out these tiers. And so we often find that people need to scale out. They have a web tier, the front-end website. It's getting overloaded. So we could go provision a new VM, and go scale out this tier pretty easily. So let's actually go back to our demo now and take a look at creating some of these service templates in these different tiers. So I'm going to go down to my library, take a look at my different templates here. And we can see that within our templates, we actually have a few VMs that are already created. Now, the way that we actually go build these VMs is we can kind of break it down into the smallest individual units. So we have what we call our guest operating system profiles. And so what we're going to do here is go create a new guest OS. It's going to run Microsoft Windows, not a Linux VM. Whoops. Go back and actually edit the settings here. And then under our guest OS profile, this is where we get to define what this individual VM is going to use inside it. So we define which version of Windows Server we're going to run, or Windows, make this Windows 8. We get to specify information about the computer name. So we can do Denmark #, give it an incremental number. Provide our admin passwords, product keys, time zone. Go create different systems and roles. So actually, let's go back to a Windows Server edition here. Go down to our roles, and we can pre-configure the different roles that are going to get installed. And so this means when we actually go and deploy this VM, these roles are already enabled. So in this case, I want to go and pre-install Hyper-V and let's say print services. I'm going to go add failover clustering as well as a feature. Get the option to join domains, and then the option to go and create scripts as well. So if you need to do some custom coding, add your own application, you can add these scripts as well. So now I've defined our guest operating system. Next thing I want to do is take a look at our profiles here. So the hardware profile is essentially what we would use in Hyper-V or Virtual Machine Manager to define how that virtual machine is built. So we take a look at how many processors it has, amount of memory, whether it uses dynamic, static, external connections, drivers, hardware, network adapters, availability, so will this VM run on a cluster or not, virtual NUMA, CPU, weight. And so this is basically defining the properties of our virtual machine, how it's going to get connected to the outside world. So now that I've defined my guest operating system, and the hardware for that operating system, we could go create a new VM template. So here we're going to go and select which VHDX file we're going to use. Give it a name. And then we get to select the hardware profile. So we just took a look at the large VM hardware profile. Use that. Select our guest OS profile. So here's the one that we just created. You can see that it has the same information. So each time we deploy these new VMs, we have standardization. We ensure that everything gets configured correctly each time. But even if you want to go use this default profile, you still have the ability to customize. So maybe we'll add Active Directory as well as part of this. They could go and add applications within this, add SQL servers, take a look at the script, see how everything is configured if we want to go deploy lots of these templates. Click Create, and now we've created a VM template. But here's our service templates, the next step that we're trying to do. Remember this service template, it's our collection of virtual machines. So we're going to call this our enterprise service. And we'll make this release 1.0. Now in this case, let's go and create a three-tiered application. What we now get to do is actually take those individual VMs that we've pre-created and go and populate the different tiers with them. So we just created this VM template. Let's put that as our front tier. Our SQL is going to be our backend database tier. And then our web would be our middle tier. And so you get to see that everything gets populated with what we've already predefined, the name, processor, virtual networks. Now let's zoom out a little here. And from here, we can actually go and add things such as networks, load balancers, to go create this connected solution. So right now we have NICs associated with each of our tiers. We can see our SQL tier here. We get to go specify how many actual VMs can be in this particular tier. So by default, we're going to start with, three VMs in this tier. With this tier, we're going to have two VMs. Then our front web tier, we can just have a single VM. So once we basically define the service, we know that each time we go deploy it, it's going to be configured the same way. It's going to be standardized. So we save it. And next thing we'll do is actually go deploy this VM. Now, I'm running in a fully virtualized environment here, so I'm actually not going to be able to go deploy this because I cannot run a VM within a VM, but we'll take you through the process here. So the deployment will fail. That's going to be expected. Just want to warn you here. So now we're going to go and provide a unique instance for this. So this is going to be our engineering app. Figure out which cloud it's going to be in, our engineering cloud. And then we got to specify unique information for this particular service. So what's the name of the service? What's the name of each VM? So essentially, this is where you can provide customization for everything. Provide this unique information. We'll click Deploy Service. And this will then go and actually push it out. Take a look at the script. Click Deploy. Our service will go out, and our service will run. So that's essentially how we're kind of viewing virtualization, building the standardization so things get deployed identically at the same time. Now, we added a lot of support for Linux in this release as well. We've added a team that's entirely dedicated to Linux integration within Virtual Machine Manager. So now we're really trying to be first-class citizens in understanding how Linux is built, how Linux operates. So you can deploy Linux VMs. You can do live migration with the Linux VMs, back them up, restore them, item-level recovery. Use dynamic memory with the VMs. And one of the reasons why our Linux virtual machines have such a better integration story is we actually check Hyper-V functionality directly into the Linux kernel. So every Linux distribution that gets built includes Hyper-V operations, it includes the integration component, so it understands how it functions as a virtual machine. So to summarize, you can see that we've made these different investments around our deploying, provisioning of our infrastructure, building what we call a cloud, and hopefully simplifying day-to-day operations. Now, I'm going to quickly go through all of these other R2 features, because there's a few here that we didn't get to cover in part of this provisioning. So first, synthetic fiber channel support, being able to create virtualized fiber channel adapters within VMs, something that was new with Windows Server 2012. Support for offload data transfer. This is the ability to directly copy information between two SANs without having to pass it through a server. Provisioning our scale-out file clusters. We talked about that earlier with support for Hyper-V. And integration with difference in disks. So we make it easier to have a base VM create different VMs from that initial base VM. Call that a difference in disk. For the networking, we've added site-to-site networking. We've added IPAM, which is one of the Windows Server 2012 features, IP address management. You can now use that, expose that, manage that through Virtual Machine Manager. Integration with other switches, easier IP address management, adding forward and extensions to our virtual switches. With our infrastructure, one of the biggest requests that we had was actually making VMM highly available. So you can now run Virtual Machine Manager directly on a failover cluster. not run it within a VM on a cluster, but run it actually on the host. So if VMM crashes, it fails, it can fail over. If you need to patch your host, VMM can move around. Now, one challenge that we had with our 2012 release was if you had a VMM server running a job, it crashed and failed over to a different server, that job would no longer execute. So we fixed that in 2012 R2, and we make sure that the tasks that are running on VMM will also fail over. So if you're deploying a service, have a failover. After the failover, we'll still continue to deploy that service. Updated management packs for better integration with Operations Manager. So you saw with Operations Manager, we wanted to see information about our resource utilization. We've added new management packs so VMM can start sending information about cloud usage, VM usage, storage usage, network usage. And under our VMs and services, we've added live cloning support within Virtual Machine Manager. So if you have a VM that's running, you want to take it offline, troubleshoot it, but you don't want to impact the production environment, you could take a live clone of that VM, troubleshoot that cloned VM. Once that's fixed, go redirect clients from your old VM that's not really working well over to the VM you've just cloned. I have the ability to inject files directly into VMs as well before they're even booted. So we looked at how we could build scripts, we could add features, we can add roles, we can now pre-install files within the virtual machines. We looked at the shared VHDX file type, and then running scripts with the VMs. So as I wrap that up, a few resources I'd like to point you to. Go try out System Center 2012. The preview is now out for R2. The full version is going to get released on the 18th of October, so coming out really soon. And we'll have evaluation editions available online. Got certifications for cloud. These are kind of a great way to really increase your knowledge across all the different System Center components. The two certifications offered for private cloud are deploying clouds and managing clouds. And they actually cover all of the different System Center components. There's no longer individual exams for just VMM, just Operations Manager, with one exception. They still have individual exams for Configuration Manager. And then finally, check out Microsoft Virtual Academy, www.microsoftvirtualacademy.com. It's a free online training portal, lots of classes, lots of courses. We have entire courses, about 4 hours of training just on Virtual Machine Manager, what's new. We have full days of training covering all of the different System Center components as well. With that, I'm going to wrap it up, but I still have a few minutes left, so I would like to take any questions that anybody still has. Yes? Why would you want to do that? Just so you don't have the SQL database out of sync? Okay, so the question is there a way to disable checkpoints for VMs that are running things that should stay in sync? So you have like a SQL database or an Active Directory virtual machine. Taking a checkpoint of one of those things which requires specific time and is actually bad, if you restore the checkpoint, things get out of sync. So to answer that question, yes. When you go and define the user roles and what actions a group or a user can do, you can specifically say no checkpoints. So this means anybody that logs into the VM or is trying to manage that VM through Virtual Machine Manager or App Controller, they can start it, they can stop it, but they can't actually take checkpoints. So yes, that functionality is available as you kind of go through those different operations. Also, you're saying, is there a way to totally disable the feature, not through the management layer? Well, that's why we encourage people to use delegated administration. You know, that's the best practice, right? If people shouldn't do a particular operation, we want to go create that boundary to prevent them from doing that. So we do that with that delegated administrator role. So the best practice isn't really being followed there. If you give everybody in your company full administrator access role, yeah, they can do bad things. So there's no way to permanently disable that. You would want to go through the process of creating this user role and then prevent them from doing that particular action. There's no all-encompassing way to fix that, though. Well, if you're an IT consultant, then it's not safe for the customer. You can't get the full administrator right away. Your own system can just do it. So that would be nice. Okay, good feedback. Any other questions? Okay then, well, you guys get out 5 minutes early for lunch. Thank you all for attending. Woo, yay, early lunch. So you get to your sandwiches early. All right, thank you all for attending.